Sometimes it's healthy to keep a secret, but other times, the secret stays in your system like poison. When it comes to family secrets, it can be difficult to figure out which is which. Family therapist Evan Imber-Black reflects on secrecy and the mixed messages our culture offers about it in her new book, The Secret Life of Families, Truth-Telling, Privacy, and Reconciliation in a Tell-All Society. She's been a family therapist for about 25 years. She's also a professor of psychiatry at the Albert Einstein College of Medicine and past president of the American Family Therapy Association. I asked her what she thinks of the school of thought that says secrets are bad, and if you keep a secret, it will fester inside you. Therefore, you should just be open.
Some secrets are bad, and I think that's part of why I did this book, because I think there needs to be a careful thinking through about every secret. Each secret is its own instance. It occurs in its own special context, and I think the view of just blurt it out, which has become an unfortunately popular view in our culture, is extremely simplistic in terms of the complexities of every secret.
Why not just blurt it out?
Well, I think if you just blurt it out, a number of things happen. One, when you do that, it's done with a lack of concern very often for the set of relationships in which a secret lives. So the popular notion that if you simply tell a secret, that's all there is to do, and that's it, and let's move on, certainly has not been my experience. I think once a secret is opened, that's the very beginning of the work. And then, as in any fairly complex ecology, when new information is released, all kinds of things begin to shift and change, and that's when the real work begins.
You write that you've seen a lot of damage done both from extreme secrecy and from extreme openness.
Right. I think, you know, certain kinds of secrets indeed do fester and poison relationships over time. The kinds of secrets that when people keep them, they're using a tremendous amount of energy to keep them. It's requiring, for instance, telling lies to children or to spouses. It's taking away from a person's own sense of their own integrity. I think those kinds of secrets, you want to begin to think very carefully about how to open them. On the other hand, I think openness needs to be done in some careful kinds of ways, lest we fall into what I call in the book the talk show telling model, where again it's the just blurted out. It's the model that says you don't have to worry about empathic connected relationships to open a secret. You don't have to open secrets in a careful relationship context, and that's the kind of openness that concerns me.
How do you help your clients examine their secrets and help them decide whether it's helping them to keep the secret or hurting them?
Part of what we always begin to do is to look at where this particular secret lives. Who knows it? Who doesn't know it? What would be the advice of various people in the family system or the friendship network? Who's saying don't tell? Who's saying open it? And so forth, so that I can begin with whoever I'm working with to get a sense of what is the world in which this secret lives and breathes. Then we begin to think about what's the impact of opening it or keeping it closed. What's the impact on each person? What's the impact on each relationship? And what's the impact on the whole set of relationships in the family? Then we might begin to look at, if a person decides they do want to open it, what would be a good time for that? One of the things I talk about in the book is telling secrets in regular time, not ritual time. You would be amazed at the number of people who go home and decide that Thanksgiving is a good time to open a secret, and then they're remembered forevermore as the person who ruined Thanksgiving in the family. So we look at what would be a good time. We look at what might be an order of telling, so that, for instance, there may be some people that it's better to tell the secret to first, because they're going to be the most supportive people that you can get on your side as you move along to open the secret to who might be the most difficult person to tell.
Do you think it's important to try to define for yourself the difference between secrecy and privacy? And if so, how do you find that line?
Yeah, I think private matters don't have shame attached to them the way secrets do. So that's one definition, I think. Private matters also do not harm another person or another person's ability to make decisions in a good way in their life. In other words, if I'm keeping something private, it doesn't impact what I call another person's capacity to play life with a full deck. And I think that's an important distinction to draw. You know, for hundreds of years, people invoked privacy around things like sexual abuse and physical abuse of wives and children, saying, you know, my home is my castle and I'm allowed to do things here and that's private, it's my own business. So I always want to look at, you know, is there a self-serving component here that really distinguishes this? This is not privacy. This is, in fact, secrecy. It's putting other people in danger. It's keeping other people from accessing good resources outside the family, as, for instance, with alcoholism. On the other hand, I think we want to make sure that people certainly have privacy in their lives. And there's been some very interesting research showing that in couples, the need to have, what, for instance, what we might call a room of one's own, whether that's a drawer of one's own or a diary of one's own, in fact, leads to greater trust in couples. If you can leave your diary out and know that your mate is not going to open it and violate, you know, your privacy, that bespeaks a very high degree of trust.
Now, let me give a complicated example that you give in your book, you know, in asking whether this is about privacy or secrecy. A woman makes a will leaving all of her money to her children from her first marriage and doesn't tell her new husband. Is this her private business or a troublesome secret from him? What do you think?
Yeah, I think it is a troublesome secret in the sense that why, for instance, would she keep it from him? It's a kind of issue where this needs to get talked through in the couple. It doesn't mean her decision won't still be the same, as it often is in second marriages, to leave one's main resources to grown children. But there's something in her keeping it that starts to tell you that all is not right in this relationship.
My guest is Evan Ember Black. She's been a family therapist for 25 years. Her new book is called The Secret Life of Families, Truth-Telling, Privacy, and Reconciliation in a Tell-All Society. Let's take a short break, and then we'll talk some more about secrets. This is Fresh Air. We're talking about secrecy and keeping secrets in the family. My guest is Evan Ember Black. She's a family therapist and the author of the new book, The Secret Life of Families. I think it's often very difficult for parents to figure out where to draw the line in terms of what to keep secret from their children. And again, it's the issue of privacy and secrecy. I don't think parents need to tell absolutely everything about their lives to their children. But
that's for sure.
Again, what kind of advice can you, general advice can you give to parents about that?
The issue, I think, with young children, there are several. Does the child know the difference between in the house and out of the house? And that's where we get again into the issue of privacy. Once you tell something in the family, it may then shift from being secret to something that is private to your own family. But many young children cannot use that distinction yet. I have a wonderful cartoon of a little girl outside at what looks like a lemonade stand selling family secrets, 5 cents each. And so clearly this is a kid who hasn't figured out yet that there are some things that you keep in the family and some things that could, for instance, put the family in danger. I certainly have worked with families where there have been HIV secrets and the family could lose their apartment, for instance, if this were known outside the family. So that's one thing. The second thing, I think, is the question, does this secret go to the heart of this child's life? So, for instance, adoption secrets, secrets about conception, reproductive technologies, and so forth, that are really about who that child is, I think need to be handled in a way where there's a sense that this child has a right to this information. And then I think we begin to get into the whole arena, of course, with adolescence and secrets. And what are some of the differences there? Because there we begin to get into not only what secrets may the family be keeping from the adolescent, but what secrets are the adolescent keeping, is the adolescent keeping from the family in making those tentative first moves outside the family to be a little more independent.
And that always gets to the question of should parents have the right to go through their kids' drawers to see what their teenager or adolescent is up to.
Yes.
What kind of advice do you give on that?
Well, you know, that's one of those things that I always wish we could start a lot earlier than age 14 or 15, because I think when parents can trust that their child, while they may be trying some things outside the house that are, flirting a little bit with the edges of things that the family might not approve of, that they don't need to be so worried that the kid is going to get into really dangerous activities. However, in a lot of families, because the communication has never been established in the first place, then adolescence becomes the full-blown episode of that. So I like to try to work on that a lot sooner. I don't think there's a lot of advantage in snooping around because the argument then becomes more why were you looking than whatever the particular subject matter at hand might be.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Evan Imber Black. She's been a family therapist for 25 years. Her new book is called The Secret Life of Families, and it's about secrets. TV talk shows encourage people to come on and tell their secrets, and that might end in reconciliation or in a big brawl. But and then, you know, the audience kind of applauds or boos,
yes,
depending on what the secret was. And people come on and say, I had an affair, a whole 3 years we were married, and, you know, this kind of thing. And I'm wondering if you think that that's affecting the way the people who see you in your therapy sessions feel about their own secrets and how they should go about telling their secrets.
Well, I've certainly noticed a change over the years of the talk shows being on, starting with, I think, a change that looked very positive to me, and I still think was positive, which was the initial breaking of a lot of taboos. The talking, for instance, by celebrities about their alcoholism, their bulimia, their drug addiction, and so forth. Very different, say, from when I was a kid, and these kinds of things would be reported in movie magazines, and the star would do whatever they could to stop the information or to sue or whatever. But the shows shifted rather rapidly. I guess they ran out of celebrities, from celebrities to regular folk. And not only to regular folk, but primarily to working class and poorer people who come on these shows and are encouraged to, quote, tell secrets for the first time on national television. Some of the shows, I've been rather amazed to see that the partner or the father or whoever it is who's hearing the secret has been told they're coming on the show for some other topic, you know, something general enough like family communication or whatever, and suddenly they're hearing this secret for the first time in a context, as you said, with an audience cheering and booing, and then somebody called a relationship expert, God help us, is brought on the last 5 minutes to criticize or excoriate or blame or cheer. And I think it's a very poor model of telling secrets. What I've seen in the consulting room is first the breaking of the taboos, and so people were more willing to come in and talk about some things, and that I thought was great. But the other thing I've seen is that in my own practice, I end up doing a lot more of what I call secret mop-up action, where people are coming in having thought that all you need to do is go home and blurt it out, and how come everybody's not cheering like they do on television? And then we begin to, you know, to do the hard work.
Well, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Evan Imber Black is a family therapist and author of The Secret Life of Families.